The following program is a production of the Barroom Network. It is intended for all audiences.
Doug Buffon.
This defense sucks. This is moronic.
John Buffon.
If your best run plays are coming off end arounds, there's a problem.
Doug was behind the microphone first. He never held back.
Very difficult to score when your offense is on the bench. When your defense is out there giving up 70, 80, 70, 64-yard drives.
Now, it's his nephew, John, and there's no holding this buffoon back either.
An offensive-minded coach that's running an offense that got 9 yards and a half. A beaten-up defense that isn't necessarily performing in key situations. And a quarterback that was expected to take a big step forward looks like an unsalvageable wreck.
I've had it! I have had it! I want somebody to get kicked in the ass!
How many games can you rattle off that involve the team running the ball 7 times and they win? I can't think of any.
I don't mind you getting beat. I got my ass whipped many times. But I tell you, I took somebody down with me.
Because Bears fans wanted to believe in the worst way that Chicago had a stable, competitive franchise. And this is what we got.
It's Buffon 55, the John Buffon Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Buffon 55, a fast-paced approach to breaking down the Chicago Bears. Barflies, it's been about a month since the Bears played last. At least that's what it feels like. I'm your host, John Buffon. With me, as always, is my producer and co-host, Alyssa Barbieri. Alyssa, how you doing? We've had like 10 days in between these games here.
It's felt like a bye week here, you know, and especially after that most recent win. You know, I'm starting to wonder if this is going to be a regular occurrence every week where we have these nail biters at the end and, you know, our poor hearts, we're going to need to see the doctor after this season.
Yeah, I'd love to think that it's not going to be that way, but after watching this team for over a month, it feels like it's going to be like that way up until about week 17. But I am anxious to share more thoughts about the Bears' future, and I want to learn a little bit more about their upcoming opponent, the Carolina Panthers. But first, you have some business to take care of. Go ahead and take it away.
Thanks, John. So I like to remind people and tell our new listeners that an important part of our show is our B55 segment. That's when I ask you 5 questions and your response must be completed within 55 seconds. The 55 is your tribute to the great Doug Buffon, your uncle, who played 15 seasons with the Bears and wore, of course, number 55. I love the segment and I can't wait for your interview with our guest. So let's get to that now.
Let's do it. We are fortunate enough to welcome John Ellis, host of The Roar, a Carolina Panthers podcast on the Blue Wire Network. John, how you doing? Thanks for coming on.
Hey, gang, what's going on down here from the beautiful chilly Carolinas? I don't know. We're in the 50s, so I guess that's chilly for us, but for you guys, not so much. How you doing?
Oh, not too bad. And I was going to say, you're not going to get too much sympathy from Bears fans. 50
right.
Summertime weather. But we're glad that you could come on and break down some Carolina Panthers talk, because we always like to know what we're up against. And I kind of want to just jump right into it, because this Carolina Panthers team, a surprise, but a pleasant surprise if you're a fan of them, because after starting the season 0-2, they've rattled off 3 straight and they're tied for first place atop the NFC South. So in your opinion, and from what you've seen, how good is this Carolina Panthers squad 5 weeks into the season?
Well, let me tell you, they're better than a lot of people thought, and that's where we'll start. I mean, Carolina was predicted by many pundits to match the win total for the entire season. They've already matched now, which is 3. I mean, that's a lot of the pundits looking at maybe 2 or 3 wins. The talk was tank for Trevor, which, of course, we've done our analysis on that on Blue Wire, and that was always kind of a silly concept in my view, because they built this offense with Joe Brady, with Teddy Bridgewater, who I know you guys saw last year, with Robbie Anderson as new acquisition, and some good pieces on the offensive line. They built this team to compete now. And one of the things we forecast is, you know, look, the defense would struggle. The offense would be able to score with just about anybody. What's been surprising is defensively, they've been able to hold their own the past 2 weeks. They've held opponents 21 points to 16 points against Atlanta, a pretty potent offense there. They did a pretty good job against Justin Herbert, who lit up the Saints last night, or 2 nights ago, I should say. So, yeah, overall, Folks in Carolina are thrilled with what they're seeing. Obviously, it's a difficult offseason with losing Cam Newton, Greg Olsen. A lot of the old faces are moving on and have moved on since. But all it takes is a little winning to get that good taste back in your mouth, and Panthers fans are excited.
Yeah, good times so far. You talked about the quarterback situation. The Panthers did let Cam Newton walk, and, you know, the Bears thought they might have a chance at him. And then the Panthers signed Teddy Bridgewater. The Bears thought they might have a chance at him. But what are the early returns on Bridgewater through the first five games? Is he performing about as well as could be hoped?
Yeah, my co-host Billy Marshall and I felt that in our preseason analysis, Bridgewater, we agreed, would have a really good opportunity with Joe Brady, who was familiar with from his New Orleans days, to come in and sort of stabilize this offense. What's been going on with Carolina, even when Cam Newton was here in 2018, is, you know, the shoulder injury, of course, the leg injury last year. We had a hard time with getting some consistency in the passing game, and especially with Kyle Allen last year. The season went down the drain when he stopped performing, and the run defense was a mess on the defensive side. But from the quarterback position, Bridgewater, I hate the term game manager. I hate it. What Bridgewater's done a good job of is coming in, and I like the word point guard better. He's distributing the ball well to all of his targets. Curtis Samuel's getting more involved. Robbie Anderson is among the league leaders right now in receiving. And DJ Moore, you saw him on Sunday at Atlanta making the dynamic play on the whip route down the sidelines. You get the ball in his hands and he can do good things. Of course, Christian McCaffrey has been out. But Teddy has done a good job, I think, of playing within structure. He's missed a few reads. He's missed a few deep balls. And that's something that Bridgewater's known for. He's not really a deep ball passer. But within this offense, it's a very well-oiled machine, and I love what Joe Brady's doing in terms of keeping everything structured, getting the ball out quick, setting up good route concepts, route designs, and Bridgewater has managed the offense very well.
You mentioned Robbie Anderson, which some thought was a peculiar signing given the fact that he seemed to be a more downfield threat, and that wasn't always Teddy Bridgewater's forte. But Robbie Anderson performing very well, on pace for a 1,500-yard season, whether he gets there or not yet to be determined. But what has been the key to his success in this Carolina Panthers system?
I think a testament to Robbie Anderson, first of all, coming back in and reuniting with his college coach, Matt Rhule. There's a great story there in terms of the connection those guys have. But also, Joe Brady, once again, putting Robbie in a position to be successful. I think Adam Gase, and even before that, a little bit with the Todd Bowles regime, they had a hard time finding a way to utilize him other than the vertical routes. And they've done a great job of getting involved in the intermediate part of the field, the quick crosser routes, hitting the stop fades. It's not just all verticals anymore with Robbie. He's running every route in the route tree right now. He's running it well. And honestly, he's given this entire, I think, team a shot in the arm. He's kind of the attitude of the offense right now. Mike Davis, in terms of running the ball, would be sort of the grit and the power. But in terms of the dynamic, the speed, but also the physicality out there in the receiving game, he's been a great addition. And, I think a lot of it is just a testament to his work ethic and his ability to really drive forward and want to redeem his career from what started out really fast and sort of lulled. But I think Joe Brady deserves a ton of credit once again for putting some good systems in place for him.
We see a lot of new faces in Carolina. We see a lot of faces leave Carolina, one of which, mm-hmm. Greg Olsen, who was a staple for so long in that tight end room. Some new faces in the tight end room now. So can you kind of break down what the production has been from the tight end position, and is it a point of strength or weakness right now?
I wouldn't say it's a point of weakness, John. I think what they're looking at right now, it's just schematic. They're using a lot of empty sets, and when they do that, they have Ian Thomas, who of course played at Indiana and is a good athletic tight end. They're not utilizing him quite as much in the passing game. He's a little more of a decoy. He's split wide, pulling defensive backs out to make matchups better inside for the dynamic players like Anderson, DJ Moore. And in the running game, him and Chris Manhertz, as well as Colin Thompson, another Temple guy, doing a great job in terms of run blocking. So I think in terms of what they bring to the table when they're running 11, 12 personnel, 22 personnel, where they have two tight ends in the game, they're doing a good job, mainly 80 and 82, Manhertz and Ian Thomas, holding their blocks. And I'm really very impressed by Ian Thomas in terms of his development in that area. It's not really a point of strength in this game. Some kind of pictured him as a Jimmy Graham option in this offense. I think Joe Brady will make it a point to get him more involved. We talked about this in our podcast. I watched him at training camp in person the past couple of years, and what he does a great job of in terms of separation is when he runs in the intermediate part of the field in man coverage, he can run by any linebacker in the league, and I truly believe that. They've got to do a better job maybe getting him involved, but they have so many targets right now. Even with McCaffrey out, it's hard to get everybody the ball. So I think that'll change. I think that Ian Thomas might be more of a factor in this game coming up with what Chicago presents defensively, but we'll have to see.
For our listeners who may have thought that name Colin Thompson was familiar, he was actually a guest on this show a couple years ago, and he was on the Bears practice squad, so might be a name that is familiar. But a name that is certainly familiar to everybody would be star running back Christian McCaffrey. He's eligible to return off of injured reserve this week, but it's kind of up in the air whether or not that will actually be the case. What's the belief about his status for this week's game? And if not, would it be former Bears Mike Davis? Would it be his prominent role without Christian McCaffrey in there? But of course, Mike Davis being signed essentially just for a compensatory pick by the Bears, for that was basically his role on the team. But do you see Davis being the workhorse again this week?
I absolutely do. McCaffrey won't be back this week. It looks like Matt Rhule has all but ruled him out based on their timeline. He's looking at a couple more weeks, it looks like, of recovery from that ankle injury. So he remains on IR, designated to return, and he did not practice today. Of course, Carolina had a bit of a COVID scare. They played against the Falcons, and Marlon Davidson has been in the protocol now. So they've had to sort of change their dynamics in practice. In terms of running the face shields, they couldn't really helmet up and hit today. So it's been an interesting week from their perspective in terms of practice. But being back to the running back situation, yeah, Mike Davis leading all backs right now in terms of yards after contact. He's leading all backs in terms of broken tackles. He's been a physical force. He talked to the media today and in the presser, he's telling us, I just run with anger. He does. He runs with attitude. And he means that in the most polite way possible. It's like a controlled violence. He really does get to that second level and seek contact. And, you know, he's a Gamecock, former USC Gamecock, played right down the road from us here. So the Carolina folks are familiar with his game. Of course, you guys have seen him. San Fran has seen him. Seattle has seen him. He's bounced around. And he has found a good home here. Joe Brady historically has been in schemes where you go back to Sean Payton. You know, they have run two backs. They've run Latavius Murray, Kamara. Before that, it was Mark Ingram. He reminds me a lot of Ingram, the way he runs. Very powerful, low to the ground, and just a very violent runner after contact. So it's one thing that can, you know, I heard Richard Sherman today talking to Chris Collinsworth about this is a more difficult offense to face now because of the unpredictability. I don't know if I agree with that totally, but I kind of understand his point in that McCaffrey, you know what you're going to get. It's pretty predictable how they're going to utilize him. And I think this gives Brady an opportunity to reevaluate moving forward how to balance these two backs. It's a good problem to have. But I think in terms of facing Chicago, he's a workhorse and he's a tough guy to get to the ground.
A big part of the success in the running back room is the big fellas up front, the Panthers offensive line, getting increasingly better with each game. They haven't allowed a sack in the last two games. So what's been the key to this unit's growing success?
No, it's been great. I mean, you look at Russell Okung, who they brought in from L.A. for Trey Turner, who had some off years of late, but is still a very productive guard. I had questions about that move, but Okung has missed some time, was back last week and looked great at left tackle, especially in the pass game. And in his place, Greg Little, who was a former third-round pick, I believe, for Carolina, played very well in his absence against the Cardinals. Second year in a row he's done that, by the way, against Chandler Jones. So you like to see that from Greg Little. Left guard Chris Reed, who's a bit of a journeyman, stepped in and played very well the past couple weeks in the run game. Matt Paradis, who was a big free agent acquisition after Matt Khalil moved on, struggled last year. He was still coming back from an injury and has played great the past couple of games. You looked at right guard John Miller, who they brought in from Cincinnati, another quiet acquisition who has played very well. PFF has him graded very favorably here the past few weeks in terms of pass and run blocking. And at right tackle, Taylor Moten, who's one of the best tackles in the league at the right tackle position. He's in a contract year, it looks like, and Carolina is pondering on whether to extend him or not. And that's a big point of contention among fans right now. Why have we not re-signed Taylor Moten? Let's get that deal done because he gets more expensive. He is a rock out on the right side. So, yeah, in terms of the line, they've done great. They push the pile. They move guys around. But in terms of the sacks, it's also a byproduct, again, of the design of the offense. Joe Brady, again, spreading the field, getting the ball out quick. and Teddy Bridgewater doing a good job not holding the ball too long, pulling the trigger, and avoiding turnovers. So it's been good.
We're talking to John Ellis, host of the Roar Carolina Panthers podcast on the Blue Wire Network. John, I want to switch sides of the ball now, and I want to talk about the Carolina pass rush, because the offensive line on the Bears side has some question marks going into this game. How concerned should Bears fans be about the Carolina pass rush?
I would be really concerned, but here's the problem. They're not healthy right now. Carolina has seen a rash of injuries all of a sudden from their premier guys. And let me walk through it with you here. Brian Burns suffered a concussion on Sunday, and so he's out right now. There's no telling what his status will be on Sunday. He was in red jersey today, not practicing. He was through the walkthrough. He was at practice, but he did not participate. So he's still up in the air, and he is the best defender on this defense, and it's almost not even close. He really is the energy up front. He had a strip sack against Matt Ryan last week before he got injured. Of course, it could have been a scoop and score, but the safety Justin Burris whiffed on it. But he has just been more than dynamic this year. He was hurt last year, wrist injury, has come back well, and has been one of the leading guys in terms of the league. In terms of getting to the quarterback in a hurry. He doesn't have the numbers, doesn't have the sack numbers, but he has the pass rush numbers in terms of pressures. Kawan Short, their Pro Bowl tackle who missed time last year, has been put on IR today, so he'll be out with a shoulder injury, and that's a big loss because Derek Brown, the rookie, has been reliant on his veteran presence beside him to take away some of that heat, some of those double teams. So I think Chicago's got an opportunity here without Short in the game to kind of zone in on Brown and run some duo, run some double teams, and take him out of the game. Brown did struggle quite a bit last week against Atlanta, but the prior 2 weeks he was dominant in the run game. So that's a big loss for Carolina. And then the other end, Yetur Gross-Matos, the rookie from Penn State, is also suffering with some injuries this week, and it looks like he is a game-time decision at this point. We just don't know. So if he's out, you're looking at Stephen Weatherly, who you guys probably know from Minnesota, came over. He's been quite effective here in a rotational role. But your two dynamic guys there, Yetur Gross-Matos, Brian Burns, both very questionable for this week, and that presents a challenge for Carolina.
I wanted to touch on rookie Jeremy Chinn, because that was a guy that a lot of Bears fans had mocked to the Bears in the second round. He ends up in Carolina. What has been his production so far?
He's been a nice surprise. Some people may say they're not surprised because he's got a bit of that Isaiah Simmons hybrid type of model that they looked at in the draft, but not at the sixth overall position in the draft. So they got great value with Chinn, of course. Coming in, they're using him in a variety of ways. One thing that we've talked about with Phil Snow's defense is they like to run a lot of three high safety looks, and he's been sort of the middle high safety in those looks. But he runs mugged up on the line at a middle linebacker position. They've seen him at the Joker position. He's off the edge rushing at times, and he plays a traditional strong safety. So he's all over the field. Coverage skills still a little raw. I mean, that's to be expected when he gets matched up on some good tight ends or maybe the slot receiver, not quite what you want there yet. But in terms of tackling, he's a rock. He can tackle anybody. He takes good angles, and he's been very effective so far against the run. So he's a good player and really good value there out of the first round. Obviously, if you take him in the first round, that's good production, but they took him in a later round. And again, I sort of go look back at Isaiah Simmons, Carolina, a lot of people, myself included, were zoning in on him rather than Brown as the guy you take to be more impactful. And they got a guy in Chinn, I think, that services that role right now. So it's a win-win.
Absolutely. And although this squad is pretty solid across the board, one weakness you could maybe point out is their run defense, eighth worst in the NFL right now. Why have they struggled against the run? And we've been waiting for a big running game out of the Bears. They've had 35 yards last week, 28 yards the week before that. Is this a potential game where David Montgomery could rack up some yards?
This would be the week, I think, especially with the situation up front with Carolina, you know, with Kawan Short being out. Who knows what's going to happen with Burns and Gross-Matos. So, yeah, the problem has been, you know, several fold here. You look at some of the run fits in terms of the second level. Tahir Whitehead, who started his career in the NFC North and played with Oakland after that, it has just not been very good. And, obviously there were a lot of question marks coming in about his ability to cover. That was the big knock on his game. But in terms of run fits, you're talking about Luke Kuechly to Tahir Whitehead. That's quite a drop off So yeah. Carolina has really had to sort of stem that tide, and he just hasn't measured up. They've rotated him out a little bit. They've getting other guys involved, like Jermaine Carter, Darius Glanton. They've gotten these other guys involved in terms of run defense. But what they are trying to do, I think, defensively, is just take away the big plays in the passing game. And I think they get caught up in defenses sometimes. Like it was a big run that Todd Gurley had, touchdown. They were basically in a dime defense. And it was a 3rd-and-3, and Atlanta was in a one-back, one-tight-end set, 11 personnel, and they just gashed them. So sometimes they're getting caught in bad defense, bad situations. I don't really blame Phil Snow for that because Atlanta is a passing team. But, yeah, I mean, they can be moved. Derek Brown, for as solid as he is, he did not have the best game against Atlanta. And once again, he's going to have to show up and really dominate up front to take away some of these gaps, because really it's about controlling your gaps up front, as you know. If they can't hold the point of attack right there at the front line, especially at the nose tackle position, or even like a 2-technique, 3-technique, getting penetration or even holding your blocks, so holding your man so the linebackers can run free, it can be problematic. Shaq Thompson is still a very solid linebacker, not quite playing up to the contract maybe this year. But again, the run defense is an area of concern right now for Carolina. This is second year in a row now where it's been. So it'll be a big test.
Well, perhaps the Bears can get more than 40 yards on the ground, but that is yet to be the case in the last couple of weeks. But because we can't really help ourselves on this show, this has become kind of a staple. We like to talk special teams every once in a while. Bears special teams, they just go hand in hand. So is there anyone that flashes on the special teams, whether it be the punter, kicker, gunner, punt returner, kick returner, anybody that the Bears fans should keep an eye out for when it comes to special teams?
Sure, yeah. I would look at Farrell Cooper as an opportunity to maybe get some splash plays from Carolina's end. Very good return man. Started out the season very strong. Had some good returns against Las Vegas week one. It's been a little quiet the past couple weeks. Hasn't had the opportunities. And again, the last week, Atlanta did kick some short, and they covered very well downfield. Not really Farrell's fault. But I think Cooper is one of the more dynamic return guys in the league. Very reliable, doesn't muff a lot of stuff, and just has the ability, quite honestly, to just take it to the house if he gets an opportunity. Did the same thing with the Rams. You guys saw it in the past. So he's got to look out for it. Obviously, it's a guy that I don't know if you kick away from in the kicking game, but in terms of the punting game, they might want to be directional there and look out. Coverage units have been pretty solid for Carolina thus far. Joseph Charlton is a rookie punter from University of South Carolina. The regular punter, Matt Pilardi, who's one of the one of the best punters in the league, is out. So that presents challenges on the directional sort of inside the 40 punts, you know, where you're trying to get guys pinned deep. But Joey Sly, the place kicker, another good story. A guy that came on last year as Virginia Tech undrafted free agent to signing from a couple of years back and has worked his way into the NFL rotation. He replaces Graham Gano and has been very effective this year. He's missed a few short ones. So, again, I know you guys in Chicago, you've seen a few bad ones over the years in terms of the kick.
A few.
We've seen the same thing, too. So we feel your pain. Hopefully Joey Sly, if he gets the opportunity, I don't know what the conditions are going to be like in Carolina here coming up this weekend, should be pretty fair, but hopefully Joey Sly gets an opportunity to boot some home here. He was 3 of 3 last week from intermediate range. So again, Farrell Cooper would be the guy I'd look at in the return game as a potential problem for Chicago.
That was one of the more detailed special teams breakdowns we've ever had on this show, so that is greatly appreciated. Before I turn you over to Alyssa, I'd got to get your prediction on the game. This is kind of a weird one because both teams have had peaks and valleys. How do you see this one shaking out?
I do think Carolina will win. I think they have an advantage at home there because they're back in their building. They're coming off a good momentum win against Atlanta, but I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be low scoring. I think it'll resemble very much what we saw last week in Chicago when Tampa came, and it was, you know, really just a physical game. I am concerned about Chicago's ability, of course, up front to wreak havoc, but I think what Carolina can do to offset that, and I think we saw this last year with Bridgewater against Chicago, very similar schematics. Again, a better offensive line in New Orleans, but maybe not the best receiving core overall, they had Michael Thomas, of course, but other than that, not a whole lot of dynamic weapons. Carolina has some people in terms of Robbie Anderson, DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel, Mike Davis, even out of the backfield, can make some plays. I think they're going to be able to keep moving the chains, be patient, not give Chicago any cheap turnovers. That's how you win. I could very well see Chicago winning this game, too. I think it comes down to a field goal again. And as we both know, that can be dicey on both sides. So we shall see. I'm going to go with Carolina right now, but we'll have to see about these injuries also with Brian Burns. If he misses action, might have to revise that pick there. That's a big one.
I don't want to hear anything about the game coming down to a field goal, but
we had a game in New Orleans last year where Joey Sly could have ran it home for us, and he missed from basically the old extra point range. So, it's brutal. I mean, I've seen Chicago over the years, and I know you guys have struggled in that area, but hopefully it'll be a clean game from that end, and it'll just be a good hard fought contest.
We love a good kicker duel. But Alyssa, you got any questions for John before we get him out of here?
I feel like we should have a therapy group for these kicker issues that we're having. But it's nice to know we're not alone. You know, that's
the
one thing we're seeing
here. We played it, just so you know, in Super Bowl 38. John Casey, bless his heart, one of the best kickers in league history, really, kicked that out of bounds to Tom Brady right before the last possession. And we've been cursed ever since, it seems, with the game against Denver week one, after the Super Bowl, we missed it wide left. It's just been, don't make me relive it. No therapy for me. I'm good. I don't even want to talk about it.
I'd also like to thank you for picking the Panthers, because, I mean, usually this goes our way, but, you know, this year has been really wonky, to say the least. So, I mean, we'll take it at this point.
I'll do what I can.
So, John, heading into this game, what matchup are you most looking forward to seeing? What intrigues you most?
I think Carolina's offensive line against the pass rush. You know, obviously we know what Khalil Mack can do. What will they do to neutralize that? They have some horses up front. Chicago does. Their defense is so stout. They play well at all levels of the game there, and the fundamentals are solid. And I'm just interested to see what Joe Brady will do offensively to stunt that, because what they faced the past few weeks, and Teddy has had really good success in terms of unloading the ball, getting it out on time. Guys have been open. Dating back to the Tampa game, where the pass rush was a little more of a problem, Teddy did struggle a little bit because they were able to get in his face, able to disrupt the passing lanes, and he was picked off twice, fumbled once. So, again, I'm interested to see what Joe Brady and Teddy and the entire line and the receiving corps, as well as Mike Davis, can do to sort of stem the tide, because you guys have one of the best pass rushes I've ever seen.
And so, speaking of that pass rush, would you say that's your biggest concern heading into this game for the Panthers?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, again, I love what Carolina's doing offensively. Can't say that enough, but I think this is going to have to be a game where they sort of dial it back a little bit. They really haven't been, like, the greatest show on turf. I mean, they put up a lot of yards, but they're doing everything, a lot of it's horizontally, honestly. They're not taking a lot of vertical shots. And that requires a little more time in the pocket. And one thing I know Joe Brady likes to do, one thing Teddy likes to do, and sometimes this is at the expense of missing some deep shots, is taking the safe stuff underneath. And I think they're going to have to really emphasize that this time around. One thing, I look back at tape from the game last year, and again, the Sean Payton influence that Joe Brady brings, I think they'll try to do a lot of max protect. You know, we talked about the tight ends. They did a lot of that last year. I think, remember that game, there were a lot of 6-0 line in the game. And a lot of max protect to sort of stem the tide against that pass rush. So, again, what they do against a very fierce pass rush for Chicago will be key, I think.
All right, John, before we get you out of here, can you tell our listeners what you're working on at the moment, where people can find your work, and how they can interact with you on social media?
Absolutely great. I'm at One Panther Place, O-N-E, Panther Place. You can check me out anytime. We're just a Panthers content machine, chugging out film study, chugging out old clips of old games, old memories, highlights, and doing some current analysis of what's going on, updating you on the press conferences, everything that's going on from Carolina Panthers land. So that's kind of our hub where we do most of our work. OnePantherPlace.com is our website. Currently under construction, but still up if you want to check out some of our archive content. And also Blue Wire, you can check out our podcast, The Roar, a Carolina Panthers Blue podcast with my friend Billy Marshall, who's also a former writer for Super Bowl Nation, SB Nation, sorry. And you can also check me out on iHeart, the radio app there. I do the Clemson pregame show for WESC-FM down here in Greenville. So if you're into college football, check us out this Saturday at 7 a.m. on the iHeartRadio app, WESCFM.com, and that's about it.
Excellent. John Ellis, host of the Roar, Carolina Panthers podcast on the Blue Wire Network. John, I appreciate you being on. We hope to have you back on later down the road when the Bears and Panthers are in the playoffs.
Oh, that sounds good. Let's do it, gang. Appreciate y'all.
Absolutely. All right, we got a lot more show. We'll be right back.
Recently, on Stuff Your Mom Threw Out, Mark Giangreco recalled this Ernie Banks story.
I also remember times when we hired Ernie Banks to be our Cubs analyst during the 84 playoff run. And we're sitting at an empty Wrigley Field on an off day shooting a special. And, you know, we took a little break. This family was getting a private tour of Wrigley Field. And this little kid came up to ask for Ernie's autograph. And, of course, Ernie, he was the greatest guy in the world, the friendliest person on earth. And he's like, Mr. Banks, can I have your autograph? And his wife at the time ran up, no autographs after 5 o'clock. And we only do so many on certain days. But she would regulate the number of autographs that he did and regulate the time in which he was allowed to give them.
Stuff Your Mom Threw Out with David Schuster and Scott Beatty, only on the Barroom Network.
Welcome back to Buffon 55. Now it's time for our B55 segment. That's when I ask John 5 questions, and his response must be completed within 55 seconds. The 55 is John's tribute to the great Doug Buffon, his uncle who played 15 seasons with the Bears and wore number 55. So, John, you ready for this?
I'm ready. Let's go.
So, for the past 2 weeks, the Bears' run game has been absolutely stifled, averaging just 31.5 yards rushing, just dismal. The Bears have gone 1-1 in those games, but is this something that absolutely has to change for the Bears to continue their winning ways? Your 55 seconds start now.
Well, the short and long answer to this is, yeah, it has to change at some point. Let's not get it twisted. The Bears don't have Peyton Manning or Dan Marino back there who can simply just do it all himself. I said last week, I don't think the Bears can win consistently if Nick Foles is throwing it 42 times per game. Well, he threw it 42 times against the Colts and 42 times against the Bucks. They were able to split the difference, but I don't think that's going to be the norm. They have to scheme a more effective run game. Maybe not end-arounds and shotgun pitches, but Nagy and Juan Castillo or the assistant offensive line coach, they got to do what it takes to figure out what they can do to be effective. Because if the Bears have the mindset that Nick Foles will have to consistently carry the offense, you're going to see lulls and probably some bad streaks. 28 total yards rushing against the Colts, 35 against the Bucks. I don't see in any universe how that kind of performance is going to be sustainable. So maybe they can get something going against Carolina, who we talked about is the 25th best run defense in the league.
It's crazy because I remember after the first couple of games, the Bears had a top 10 rushing offense. And I was just like, is this real life? And they went from a top 10 rushing offense to a bottom 6 in the league within a matter of weeks. And it's just, it's really frustrating. And I know they went against two of the best run defenses in the league over these last couple of games. But like you said, the offense cannot survive without a running game. Nick Foles is going to just be, he's going to be back there just chucking it all game. He's not going to be able to sustain that for the entire season. So they need to find a way to get the run game going. And against this Panthers run defense, I think this could be the week. This is the week where they need to find a way to get that run game going.
More than 35 yards. I mean, anything, a little bit more than that.
Just anything. Mm-hmm. That was so bad. So speaking, we were talking about Nick Foles before. So despite the fact that he finished strong against Tampa Bay, he didn't look sharp coming out of the gate. Some errant throws cut drives short, and the Bears offense, once again, looked anything but consistent throughout the game. What is your evaluation of Nick Foles so far through these 3 games that he's been playing in? 55 seconds and go.
Look, if you're asking me if I still think he should be the starting quarterback, the answer is yes. But clearly, there have been some misses and some bad play. However, a big factor that doesn't show up on the box score is Nick Foles' confidence and his willingness to challenge the head coach. When the Bears were moving the ball in the fourth quarter and they got down to the red zone, Nick Foles wanted to kind of hurry up and push the tempo, and it seemed like Nagy wanted to slow down, huddle up, and be a little more methodical. Well, they ended up getting pushed back and settled for a field goal. And then you saw an exchange on the sideline between Nagy and Foles, in which Foles is clearly irritated at the situation, and I'm pretty sure I saw him say, I don't care, when Nagy was giving his side of things. That kind of demeanor goes a long way. That's a guy who sees what the defense is giving him and he wants to pounce. Look, I'm not trying to turn this back into a Foles-Trubisky thing, but I don't think you see Mitch Trubisky give that kind of fire back to Matt Nagy during a game.
No, absolutely. And I think I gained, you know, I had a respect for Nick Foles, but like seeing that, it's something that we're not used to seeing, obviously, you know, with Trubisky in there. You know, Nick Foles, he knows what's working. Like you said, he's able to read a defense and he knows how to run this offense, even just being in a game, being in the starter for the first two games or for these last two games. So, you know, it was definitely refreshing to see that. And I think, you know, it sucks, but, you know, we have to give him more time. Obviously, he's only been the starter for two games. He doesn't have the time with his cast of characters here. So I think that, especially if they get the run game going here, you know, let's see what Nick Foles looks like a few games from now, especially as, you know, Matt Nagy has only been calling plays for Nick Foles for, you know, 2.5 games here. So, you know, I can't wait to see how that relationship continues to flourish, especially because Matt Nagy knows that Nick Foles is someone that can go out there and operate this offense successfully.
Really sucks that we have to keep talking about give it time. We're in week six. they're gonna catch fire. They're gonna get on the same page soon. It's gonna be halfway through the season, but we'll get there.
Feel like it's been 60 years.
Yes.
So Jimmy Graham, you know, speaking of good things on offense, Jimmy Graham caught another touchdown pass this week in week four. And although highly touted rookie Cole Kmet has yet to make any significant impact, the tight end situation in Chicago appears to be head and shoulders better than last year's version. But what say you, John? Are the tight ends underperforming, overperforming, or are they right on track? The clock starts when you do.
Well, I'll briefly talk about Kmet. The only time we saw his name called was for a penalty, so I guess that's the increase in usage Nagy was talking about. But rookie tight ends tend to struggle, and it isn't completely necessary that he be thrown into a prominent role right now since Graham is playing well, so I'm going to give Cole Kmet a pass for now. As for Jimmy Graham, I said before the season that if Graham catches 40 to 50 balls and has 6 touchdowns, he'll be worth the contract they gave him simply because of the upgrade it would be over the production of 2019. Well, through 5 games, Jimmy Graham has 17 catches and 4 touchdowns. He's on track for 54 catches and 13 touchdowns. So I don't know if he's going to get there, but even if he gets close to that, he will be worth that $9 million they're giving him this year. So that one-handed grab we saw in the end zone against the Buccaneers, that was a thing of beauty. Can you imagine Trey Burton or Adam Shaheen making that play? Hell, can you imagine Trey Burton or Adam Shaheen even on the field in week 5 for the Bears? So I think that Graham's doing a good job. They're overperforming, at least what my expectations were.
I just got, like, you know, nightmare flashbacks, you know, just Adam Shaheen, Trey Burton. It feels like years ago, and it was only just last year because it was just so depressing watching tight ends on this team. And Jimmy Graham, I remember just how much criticism the Bears got for that signing. He's old, he's washed up, he's not going to do anything. And here he is, he has 4 touchdowns through the first 5 games, which is just 1 touchdown less than all the combined touchdowns he had with the Green Bay Packers in 2 seasons. You know, Matt Nagy, you know, he needs a tight end in this offense. We're seeing what Jimmy Graham can do. And, you know, like you said, I mean, it's been 5 games. Let's see, you know, what else Jimmy Graham can do in this offense. I'm willing to give Cole Kmet a pass. Like you said, I think Bobby Massey's touched the ball more than Cole Kmet has this year.
Yes.
With that fumble recovery and that catch. So, I mean, we'll see what Cole Kmet can do. But right now, you know, I'm really pleasantly surprised with what Jimmy Graham has been putting up.
Yeah, and he actually provides a bit of a security blanket in the red zone. We saw a few throws where he gets one-on-one coverage, and they just go to him. And they haven't had that kind of option at the tight end position in years because, I mean, that's not really what Trey Burton did whenever he was on the field, and Adam Shaheen couldn't stay on the field. So he gives them an option that they really haven't had in a significant period of time. So I think that he's worth the money that they're giving him because he is at least not making them so one-dimensional in their red zone offense. So I'm pretty pleased with what Graham's brought to the table so far.
And obviously we can't not mention the Bears defense and what they did in this game. You know, we talked about the defense being underappreciated last week. It feels like it's a weekly thing at this point. And they followed that up with another good performance in which they held a Tom Brady offense to just 19 points and created a big time turnover. Is this defense starting to heat up? Your time starts now.
they were catching some undeserved heat after the Colts game because they lost. Now they're back after the win against the Bucs. Look, they did get more pressure on the quarterback against Tampa Bay, and that ground-shaking hit from Kyle Fuller that ended up being a fumble proved to be vital. But this defense has been solid all year. How many points did they allow in the second half against the Colts? 6. How many points did they allow against Tom Brady and the Bucs in the second half? 6. They are 4th in the league in points allowed per game at just 20 points. They held 2 probable playoff teams to just 19 points in consecutive weeks. You know how many teams scored less than 19 points in week 5? Just 7. So we also saw a classic Khalil Mack taking over the game scenario last week. So if that becomes common again and Robert Quinn can start getting in his rhythm on the other side and the secondary keeps doing what it's doing, this already good defense could take another scary step forward. So, yeah, I think that they're still kind of underappreciated because they have been solid all year long.
Yeah, and we talked about how they are like a good defense, but not great. And I feel like this was a game that the defense needed, especially seeing what Khalil Mack was doing out there. The first week that where he didn't have a designation before game time, so he was healthy heading into this game, and we saw what he was able to do against Tom Brady. And you saw what this Bears defense has done over the last a few weeks here. Actually, they faced 3 offenses that have been, you know, averaging over 30 points, and they've held all 3 of them to under 30 points. You know, they might be, you know, a bend and break defense, but, you know, they're not giving up points, which is the important thing here, especially when your offense can't seem to find the end zone. So, you know, the Bears defense is always going to garner a little bit of criticism here because we just, like we've said in the past, we expect so much from them. But this defense, I feel like this could be, this was a game that could really, you know, help jumpstart them.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what you said. I think that people were holding a 2018 standard to this defense, and although they haven't lived up to that particular standard, they're still a really, really good defense, and this is absolutely a defense you can win a championship with if the offense holds up its side of the bargain. So hopefully we see that at some point.
That's a pretty big if, John. We shall see if it pays off.
I know.
Okay, John, so you know, we know you love talking about big picture items, and it usually ends up depressing Aldo and me. So, but with a 4-1 record, the Bears have a legitimate shot at making a playoff run here. I know it's 5 weeks in. You know, put your optimism hat on, John. You ready? Do you feel as hopeful? Let's turn the clock off on this one. Go for it.
Oh, I do love prognosticating, so let's start painting that big picture. According to 538, the Bears have a 72% chance of making the playoffs and a 22% chance of winning the division. 72%! I'm thinking a lot of Bears fans didn't expect to hear that going into week 6. So let's start going over some things quickly. Games that really looked tough aren't looking as tough anymore. The Panthers will be a good test, but after that, they get the Rams and the Saints. Neither one of those teams looked especially primed to run over anybody. The Saints needed a miracle to take down the Chargers on Monday night, and the Rams have been in close games all year with bad teams. They eked out a 3-point win over Dallas, and they beat the winless Giants and underachieving Eagles by just 1 score. So I'm not going to go through every game, but they still have 2 games against the Vikings, who are proving to be pretty bad, the Lions again, and then they have games against struggling teams like the Texans, who already fired their coach, and the Jaguars. So there's a real possibility that the Bears could be as bad as 5-6 in their final 11 games and still get into the playoffs with a 9-7 record. And I just rattled off 5 games that they'll probably be favored in, and the rest are going to be tight games. So I know I'm not always the sunshine and rainbows type of guy, but I actually like the Bears' chances right now. So in the famous words of Michael Scott, I am ready to be hurt again. And with that, we're going to jump into our last segment. We call it Buffon's Basement. That's when Alyssa and I go pour some cold water on Aldo Gandia, who fell asleep in his recliner with a half a glass of whatever the hell he's drinking now. Aldo, you awake?
How come you don't have any alcohol in your basement down here? It's all protein drinks and carrot juice, grass. What is all this stuff?
There might be a wine cooler in the freezer somewhere.
You got to dig, Aldo. You got to dig to find it.
I guess. Get
behind the frozen peas and all the other stuff. You might find one of those.
Great interview with John Ellis. Boy, he really broke it down for us, huh?
Yeah. He knows that team inside. Now, when I asked him about special teams, I did not expect to get a full, and that's on the spot stuff. Like, he didn't know I was going to ask him that. And he just goes and just rattles off everything. I'm like, damn.
I'm right.
Now we know a lot more about the special teams.
Issues.
Yeah.
When you have kicker issues, you know your special teams pretty well.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we can attest to. Absolutely.
I'm going to make sure I'm back from the bathroom when the kicking teams come out there just because of John Ellis's breakdown. I want to see what he's talking about.
I want to know what the hype's about. We got plenty of stuff to talk about right now in this present state with the Bears. We'd be remiss if we didn't at least address some of, I don't want to call them rumors, but speculation. There's a big free agent whale out there, and some of the people out there in the punditry world think the Bears could land him. That's Le'Veon Bell, who was recently cut from the Jets. I'd love to get your opinion on whether or not you think the Bears should go out and get Le'Veon Bell. Aldo, I'll start with you because we just brought you on. Is this a guy you want to see on the Bears roster if they have the opportunity to do so?
I really don't think he is necessary. I think that if you're going to spend any kind of dollars or try to work out a trade and bring in a player, it should be offensive or and or defensive line help. I think, you know, you probably need some depth here. You've got Alex Bars or maybe Rashard Coward playing the left guard position. And while I like both of those players, you know, what happens if one of those guys goes down or somebody else in the offensive line goes down? So I think some depth in the offensive line is a higher priority. I think the nose tackle position is a higher priority. So if you're going to spend any resources at all, I would prefer that it go to the line of scrimmage, players there. Now, Le'Veon Bell could probably help, but there was a reason why he wasn't playing well with the New York Jets, and a lot of it had to do with the fact that his offensive line wasn't playing well. So if he's going to come to another team that isn't playing well because of offensive line issues, then really you're just treading water.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree with you, Aldo. Like, I don't need them to go out and get him. I mean, I'm not going to be mad if they do because he's just an overall weapon I think could help this team. But like you said, there's a reason that he wasn't succeeding in New York. And they have, you know, very similar struggles to what the Bears have right now, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Plus, I mean, look, the Bears went out and they signed Lamar Miller to their practice squad and, you know, with the belief that they're going to be bringing him up to the active roster here within the next few weeks. So, I mean, I don't need them to go out and get Le'Veon Bell, but, you know, if they did, I wouldn't be mad either.
Yeah, I might be a little more on the side of being just fine with them signing Le'Veon Bell because he's still going to get paid from the Jets. So there's a good chance that a team could really bring him in on the minimum. Now he gets to pick where he goes because he's a free agent now. But if they can get him super cheap and maybe he doesn't garner a lot of offers. Maybe the Bears come in with a low ball offer and they get him on the cheap for the rest of the year and he doesn't care because he's still going to get paid out from the Jets with his guaranteed money. So I think with Tariq Cohen going down and seeing what they got as far as depth at running back, where Cordarrelle Patterson seems to be your number two, I think Le'Veon Bell would fit in pretty well with the Matt Nagy offense, especially could fill that Tariq Cohen role, maybe not, obviously not as a punt returner, but as that weapon out of the backfield to catch and, you know, really take the top off. I think that he is a possibility. Now, if they don't sign him, I'm not going to be heartbroken. If they do sign him, I'm not going to be through the roof about it. I just think that he could prove to be quite valuable in that offense. But Aldo, I wanted to go back to something you said about the offensive line, that you look at some of the depth. Alex Bars goes in because Daniels is out for the season. Who's behind? Look at the depth. Arlington Hambright, is he going to be the guy that eventually get pulled up, the seventh rounder this year? But do you go out in free agency? There's some names that are familiar to Bears fans that are still floating out there. Ted Larson, who they could always, I think they might have him on retainer. Eric Kush, who also played with the Bears for a while, is a free agent as well. Would you feel okay with them bringing in one of those familiar names to add some depth? Or is it someone where you're just like, okay, let's try to work from within?
Well, I know that every week they bring in players for tryouts just to see who's out there staying in shape and, you know, for precautionary purposes in case somebody does get hurt. I know there were some inside linebackers that were in this week. But to answer your question, you know, if they've taken a look at these guys and they are in shape and can play, hell yeah, let's bring in some help. Because the biggest thing that I have seen with the run game in the last 2 weeks, when we've been averaging about 30 yards a game rushing is that the offensive linemen are being blown off the line of scrimmage in a way that didn't happen in games 1, 2, and 3. Now, like Alyssa said earlier, yeah, you were playing better competition, but at the same point, can it also be that tape has had something to do with it, and that defensive coaches now have had 3 weeks of tape to analyze what the new Juan Castillo blocking schemes are, and so that now they've got an edge on these players, and they're being overwhelmed because there's that tape available letting the coaches know, the opposing team coaches know what's going on with these offensive linemen. So I am concerned about that. So something has got to happen this week, and this is a good opponent. Like John Ellis was saying, this is a good opponent to get back on that wagon of running the ball effectively. We saw, in fact, I got a sound clip here. We've got Matt Rhule, the coach of the Panthers, who is a great coach, talking about the run game and how they were blasted for almost 5 yards a carry in last week's game.
You know, we know that they were going to come in and run the football. That's you know who they are, and they do it really well. I thought the biggest issue was just in our movements, our defensive line not getting in the gap and really making it an unclear picture for our linebackers. And then obviously the one explosive run. You know, those explosive runs, you know, they'll really change the stats in a hurry, as you know. So we have to negate the long run, the long touchdown run. And then, you know, to me, you just have to keep fighting to make 5 yard runs, 3 yard runs. And I think it really starts up front with us being more disciplined about being in our gap. It's not optional. We're not playing optional one gap football. And that's something that, you know, we have to address this week.
Well, let's hope they don't address it this week.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I was going to follow that up. Alyssa, how confident are you with the current depth of this offensive line? Is it something that needs a Band-Aid in free agency, or is it something that you think can maybe hold water at least for the rest of the season?
I mean, like Aldo was saying, I would definitely, you know, go out there and explore what's on the market there, because the offensive line, there are already concerns with the starters, and then you lose James Daniels, who was, you know, one of the better offensive linemen who's been playing this year. So, you know, it's definitely a concern. I would like to see them go out, and, you know, there are some, you know, free agents out there. I think, like, you know, Josh Klein is out there, like you mentioned, you know, Ted Larson and Eric Cush, you have some history with this organization. So I don't feel confident about or comfortable with anything relating to the offensive line right now until they prove me wrong. So we'll see.
Well, that's comforting. Thanks.
Well, then you've got the issue of
optimism.
Then you've got the issue of the offensive line coach Juan Castillo is not going to be at Carolina this week. And Nagy was complimentary towards Donovan Raiola, the assistant offensive line coach, and said that today on Wednesday he did a nice job of installing the package in, but they're still concerned that the guy who is the architect of this new blocking scheme and has been tutoring these offensive linemen, the main guy, isn't going to be at the game. So I'm concerned about this week. We have got to see an improvement with the run game and the offensive line blocking.
Well, yeah, because if they struggle to run the ball this week, if they come out and they still only rush for 25, 35, even just 40 yards flat, and they don't look good, that doesn't give me a lot of hope moving forward. Because as John Ellis said, this is their opportunity to rack up some yards in the run game. And if they can't do it against Carolina, then they're not going to do it against some of these other teams they got coming up. So this will go a long way in letting us know, is the run game salvageable, at least in the foreseeable future with this offensive line. One thing I want to switch gears, and I want to get crazy hypothetical with you guys. I want to go out of this world. This is what could happen, big picture stuff, because you guys know I love throwing out these yeah but what ifs. We saw last week Dak Prescott go down with a terrible injury, but from everything we understand, he's going to fully recover and he'll be ready by June. Now, he does not have a long-term deal with the Dallas Cowboys. What if, and I'm just saying, we talked about this before the injury, but what if Dallas would, for some unforeseen reason, let him enter the free agent market. Then that means they either don't get a long-term deal done when he comes back, or they don't tag him again, and they let him test the waters to see what he can get. Is this something where you, if you're Chicago, you say, for the love of God, go get this man. Just go sign a proven commodity and figure out the cap after the fact. Are you willing to go all in on a Dak Prescott coming off of a bad leg injury? Aldo.
Oh, gosh. I was hoping you'd go to Alyssa first. I have to I'd be very, very cautious, because public statements by Jerry Jones and his son, the general manager of the team, or he's got some role on the team, have said that Dak is part of the future, and he's part of their long-term future and so forth. So you've got to then wonder that if for some reason they decided, man, maybe let's let him go free agency, are there medical doctors saying, oh, boy, this is not healing the way we expect it to. You know, giving him $30 million a year might be really, really iffy here. So I worry about stuff like that. I don't want to invest tens of millions of dollars, $100 million on a player who is who has physical defects. I hate to say that, but, you know, as a businessman and as a fan, and if I were playing the role of general manager, I would be concerned about that. So ideally, I would love to draft a quarterback and build around that quarterback for the next 10, 12, 15 years. And you get the benefit of having that rookie salary for the quarterback, the most important position, before they start demanding $25+ million.
Alyssa, yeah, are you going the same route?
If Prescott's available, I think you do whatever you need to do to go out and get him, because it's not very often that top 10 quarterbacks, Pro Bowl quarterbacks, are on the open market like that, especially for a team like Chicago that I don't need to, you know, relay the quarterback struggles through 100 years of history with this team. So I think if Prescott's out there, they got to do what they got to do, you know. You know, it's going to be, obviously, the money is the biggest issue in the salary cap space, especially because they have so much on the books already. But if there's a way that they can get this done, they have to do it. And I think I read an article before, I think from ESPN, I think Jeremy Fowler was saying that the Bears would be one of the teams that might, you know, prioritize making, you know, bringing Prescott to the team, which, I mean, I would love. If they can make it happen, they have to do it. I don't see how you don't try.
Aldo, to your point, I'm going to rattle off three names for you. Cade McNown, Rex Grossman, Mitchell Trubisky.
John,
ideally, yeah, you'd love to draft the guy that's here for 10, 12, 15 years. Ideally, that would be great. That hasn't been the case in Chicago Bears history. So my thoughts are more in line with Alyssa, where if you can go get a proven commodity, and yeah, it's going to cost a lot of money, but eventually if you home grow one of these guys, you're going to have to pay him anyway if you want him to be around 10, 15 years. Look at Patrick Mahomes. So I would say, obviously get some research on the medical. Jerry Jones is talking about how this guy's in their long-term plans and he's part of the family. Well, he didn't think that enough to give him a long-term deal this offseason, and they had to slap the franchise tag on him. So Jerry Jones also says that you got to delve out all this extra money and you got to think about the team, and he's thinking about, you know, how they could divide the salary cap pie and everything. So nothing's out of the question that, you know, they decide, well, we can't afford to give him this long-term deal and we're not going to pay him whatever the second salary cap is. It's probably going to be like $38 million for 1 year, which is a huge chunk out of your salary cap. So if it would happen, maybe it's not just because, you know, they're fearing his ankle's messed up, but they're thinking, well, we can't afford to pay this guy $40 million this year, or we're not going to give him this much money. And maybe it might just be like, you want this much money? Well, we'll go ahead, hit the free market and see what you actually get. And maybe the Bears come in with an offer he likes, and it's not $40 million a year, probably will be $30 million a year, but I don't know. I'm not a capologist. I'm not a general manager, but if there's an opportunity where a guy like that hits free agency and I have a franchise that is not just starving, but just utterly, utterly desperate for some sort of consistency at the quarterback position, I make it happen. because we see that you can win with a really good quarterback and a not great supporting cast. Where you have a bunch of really good role players and a not so great quarterback, you get mediocrity, and that's what we've seen out of Chicago. And not even, I mean, we've seen less than mediocrity at times. We've seen great defenses just be let down completely. So I would be more along the lines of go get them. Let's figure it out. Go get them. But who knows? And maybe you see even, I mean, you see some of these guys like Allen Robinson, who is doing what he's doing with Mitch Trubisky and Nick Foles, and we saw him with Blake Bortles. If he gets someone like Dak Prescott, what kind of numbers is he going to be putting up? I mean, maybe he's good for the development of a Cole Kmet, who you drafted pretty high. Maybe he's good for a Darnell Mooney, who you're pretty high on, who's a fifth-round pick, who's going to be making nothing for the next 2-3 years. So it can just make everybody around him better. But once again, we're talking some of what are the odds that he – what are the actual odds he goes to free agency? Pretty low, right?
Yeah,
I think so. Very low. You know, again, if the medicals check out, there's no way the Cowboys they've got the ability to franchise tag him again next season if necessary. And I just will take the Cowboys at their word that they have Dak in their long-term plans. And I think the reason they didn't sign him to a long-term contract is because they had leverage. You know, they were able to hold off on signing him and spending all that money for another year or two if they franchise tag him again. And so that's something that, you know, teams management has at their disposal, and probably what's happening with A-Rob right now is you know, keep his salary down. If you got to franchise tag him, that's unfortunately the business of us professional sports.
Yeah, I guess so. But it's just nice to think about, man, if the Bears had a really great quarterback.
I mean,
that's the fan coming out. That's the hypothetical fan coming out.
Let me ask you two guys.
I'm imagining that, though.
Let me ask you two guys question, starting with Alyssa. What do you think are the chances that Nick Foles could be he's not going to be a tier one quarterback. Let's not kid ourselves, but that he could be a high tier two quarterback, because really, isn't that all this team needs in order to go to the Super Bowl and compete to win because of their outstanding defense? What do you think the chances are that as the season goes on and Foles becomes more comfortable with the offense, and do you think that he could play at a high level to help us get to the Super Bowl?
I think he could, and I think obviously Matt Nagy believes he could, which is the reason why the Bears went out and got him. Ryan Pace handpicked Matt Nagy, the quarterback that he wanted in free agency. You know, obviously he's going to need a little help around him in terms of getting that run game going, but I think that Foles can play to that high level. And I know that we've talked about, you know, if Foles does, you know, impress here going, you know, down the line here, he does have that, you know, that option in his contract, you know, to opt out of the rest of his deal. And then the Bears could be without a quarterback heading into 2021. So, I mean, the hope, it's kind of like you hope that Foles does well enough that he could possibly leave the team. Or do you hope that he just, you know, is mediocre and he sticks around for a couple of years?
Yeah, I think that if he's a top, you know, upper echelon, second tier quarterback, yeah, that's what they need to go far in the playoffs this year, next year, potentially in 2022. However, the dynamic of this team is going to change at some point, because Akeem Hicks isn't going to play forever. He's 30 years old. Khalil Mack turns 30 in February. Kyle Fuller, they got to figure out his contract because he takes a huge chunk out of the salary cap coming up. This defense is continuously getting older, and I think a lot of people don't pay any mind to that because they're so good now. But this team, even if you keep it together, is not going to be the same. The defense I'm talking about.
Sure.
Danny Trevathan, we've already seen, is showing signs of slowing down. So maybe in the next 2-3 years, Nick Foles can be a guy that gets them, dare I say, to the promised land. But eventually, you're going to need good quarterback play, because the defense, if it doesn't reload, or if it doesn't, you know, keep stockpiling great players, young players, and maybe they're not going to be a top 5 defense or even a top 10 defense, eventually it needs to even out where the offense is pulling its weight, and the Nick Foles performance isn't going to get it done. Mm-hmm. It's barely getting it done now. Mm-hmm. So maybe they do, you know, go. Maybe they take your approach, Aldo, and they draft a guy in the second round this year or the third round, and maybe he's the heir apparent to Nick Foles in 2022, and hope that that guy turns into a really good starter. But I think that they have a window right now, and Nick Foles can be that gatekeeper for the next 2 years, maybe 3 years. But eventually, I mean, you have to have something long term at quarterback, and you have to have a guy that can win you a game. I mean, the years of, you know, yeah, Nick Foles did win a Super Bowl in Philadelphia, and he had a great supporting cast, and that was a magical run. But it just seems like that isn't sustainable. Like, to have that just that jag, just a guy back there, just tossing it around with the great guys around him, that isn't sustainable too much. You don't see Trent Dilfer winning the Super Bowl this year anymore. You need some kind of consistency there. So maybe he is the guy for the next 2 years. But man, I just want a long-term answer. And I know that Bears fans have been asking for that since 1986 or 87, but I just want something consistent back there, and maybe I'm asking for too much.
You're young, Joan. You're very young. It'll happen someday in your lifetime, not mine.
Can you promise that?
No promises. But the reason I asked that question is because I heard Matt Nagy's press conference today and Nick Foles' press conference. And, you know, they were talking about communication and what they like and getting to know one another. Alyssa was referring to that earlier. And I have hope that these guys are going to figure out a way to take this offense from the D level grade, you know, D plus grade that it's at now, to a B minus, maybe B plus. Let me play a quick clip of Matt Nagy talking about the communication that he has had with Nick Foles, and how that is helping the team build their offense.
Y'all are figuring out and understanding how opinionated Nick is, right? He is, and you like that about him. When you have those opinions and you have stuff to back it up with the experience he's had, he's kind of developed who he is now as a quarterback. So what's nice is that on the personal side, the relationship that we have with each other, you know, for instance, in the game the other day, Nick was joking about it with me that, you know, it's funny because on the sideline, when he was talking to me about going, you know, picking the pace up and doing different things, some people can take that like we were arguing, and he was laughing about it because that's not who we are as that's like, we just, that's how you talk through things and you figure out what you like and don't like, especially the both of us, is neither one of us. We both understand we want the best for the team. So what it is now is just a matter of the communication process of being able to understand that if you say something that you don't like within this offense, tell us, and let's not do it. If there's something that you really like, let's do it. So, you know, for me, I love that. I love being able to use different people's ideas and thoughts and strengths to the best of our ability, if it's going to help us. Now, there's also that fine line, right, of knowing, okay, are you doing too much? And that's what I think Nick on his end is taking care of that part of it, so that we don't get into those situations too much. But I really believe that it's going to continue to get better and better as we go here.
I don't know. I'm hopeful. I hear that, and I know John is probably rolling his eyes right now. This guy is talking that crap again. But I buy into it sometimes.
Yeah, and I think if that makes – anything apparent, is that he really likes Nick Foles.
Yeah.
He really mm-hmm. likes Nick Foles as his starting quarterback. So anyone that's going to be, you know, clamoring for Nick Foles to get benched after a bad play and put Trubisky back in, I don't think that's happening this year, because I think that he really likes what Nick Foles does. I think he likes his relationship with Nick Foles. I think he likes how they communicate with each other. I think he likes how Nick runs the offense. So I think that no matter what, you got Nick Foles at least for the rest of this season and potentially next season as well. So, and don't get me wrong, I want it to work. I saw some great things Nick Foles can do for the offense. Let's hope that it really is just him getting more acquainted with the offense. He hasn't, like we said, he had no preseason. He had to do a quarterback competition with Mitch Trubisky, so he didn't get a full-time reps. He just now started taking a full-time, first-time reps at practice leading up to a game. So let's hope that he is just working through that, and I hope he is. I hope he is the answer. Mm-hmm. I hope he is the guy that can lead this team deep in the playoffs. I hope he can be. I don't know. Maybe it's the cynic in me or just watching this team long enough to think that that may not be the case. But I sincerely hope so. And I think that the coach has his back. And I think that they have at least a relationship that where they can really work through problems and, you know, read defenses and figure out what's best for the team. You heard it in just his tone of voice. Him talking about Nick Foles is like he's literally happy talking to Nick about Nick Foles. His tone wasn't always like that when he was talking about Mitch Trubisky. He was very matter of fact, he complimented Trubisky, but it was never like, oh, this guy, and this is just the way we talk, and people are laughing, but the way that we're arguing on the sideline, that's just how we communicate. And he sounds like a buddy from college you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But so I think that Nick Foles is your guy, whether you like it or not. And so I hope that they can figure that out.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys saw that video that Emmanuel Acho posted on Twitter where
the David Montgomery play?
Yes, exactly. So Acho was saying this is why Nick Foles is perfect for Matt Nagy's offense, because he knows how to run it. He sees that the Bucs are calling for an all-out blitz. He motions David Montgomery back into the backfield. He tells Charles Leno, because he sees then one of the blitzers, the outside linebacker, look back to the safety and say, I'm not going to blitz. And so the safety moves back into like a cover two position, and so Foles tells Charles Leno he's not going to blitz. And then he talks to A-Rob and asks him to change the pattern to throw like a little bit of a pick so that David Montgomery can have a clear lane to his on his pass pattern, his wheel pattern. And Foles lobs a beautiful pass and there picks up a huge first down late in the game. And that is what Mitch Trubisky was incapable of doing. And may be able to do it someday, but Nick Foles can do it now.
And that's the kind of stuff that gives you hope for the future, for what this offense can do, because you have someone capable like Nick Foles back there who he knows what he's doing, and he can do all of that, things that Trubisky can't do. So although I'm trying to be optimistic here, I'm trying. It's hard because in my almost 20 years being a Bears fan, it's been pretty pretty ugly, but, you know, I want to hope. I think maybe because offense has been, you know, pretty bad already to this point. I mean, they can only go up from here, I think. But I think with Nick Foles in there, I think that this offense could get a lot better. And I'm hoping that it does, you know, heading here to later in the season and hopefully to the playoffs.
How weird has this season been? Because I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago we were talking about, when they blow this team up, what's it going to look like? And now they have a 72% chance of making the playoffs. Like, this is, I mean, across the board, 2020 has been weird. We have Tuesday night football now, and we got, you know, extended bye weeks for people. And, you know, obviously some fans, no fans, depending on where your team plays. But is this just kind of on par for the weirdness of the 2020 season that, a couple weeks ago, this team's dead in the water. You get rid of Trubisky. The coach is gone. Pace is gone. They got to get rid of all this dead weight. They shouldn't re-sign Allen Robinson because they got to start anew and they can't be, you know, putting all this money into older players. And now, you know, they're 4-1 and they got a, you know, 72% chance of making the playoffs. Like, is this going to be what it's like for the rest of the year, or is it going to be like, this team's awful, this team's great, this team is just, you know, blow it up? I don't know if I can stay on this roller coaster ride until January.
Think it's a guaranteed roller coaster ride at this point.
Oh yeah, really?
Let's be real, if there was ever going to be a year where the Bears would just shock everyone and, you know, make the playoffs, dare I say, make it to the Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl. I can't even imagine that. This would be the year that would happen, though, wouldn't it? Because everything's just so crazy. Like, this would be the year. So, you know, fingers crossed.
Yeah. I think we're going to see even more weird things happen in the coming weeks. You know, we might We might see Matt Nagy at quarterback.
I think he'd love that.
Oh, my goodness. He would love it, yes.
I think he'd love that.
Yeah. In his own mind, he feels no one can run this offense like I can.
Yes. Yeah. They'd go to the Super Bowl if Matt Nagy was playing quarterback. But, you know, the Bears, and, you know, knock on wood, and, you know, keep putting those good vibes in. They've escaped some of the COVID scares that some of these other teams are dealing with, and mm-hmm. their schedule for the most part has gone untouched. And they lose Juan Castillo this week because he's quarantining. But as far as big blows that they've had to move a game, or they had a game moved because another team had to move their game because of COVID. They got the Colts game got moved, and of course that's the game they got smoked. But they, for the most part, have been lucky going through this. So if just like football normally without COVID is a war of attrition, that's going to be the same case to the umpteenth degree now with all the COVID tests and making sure you don't test positive. And if you do, you're not playing. And they saw the Patriots lose Cam Newton in a big game against the Chiefs. So if there's ever a time that things are going to get weird and we're going to embrace the weird, hell, make it this year. And, you know, the I don't care if the Bears, you know, back into the playoffs, or they're the worst playoff team in history, or they're the worst 4-1 team in history. I don't care. I'd rather be the worst playoff team in history or the worst 4-1 team in history than the best 1-4 team in history. I'd rather just give me the wins and keep calling them bad. I don't care if they keep winning. I don't care. I don't care if other teams are better than them with worse records. I don't care, because this isn't a power ranking thing. You know, the people at Sports Illustrated who, you know, put the Bears at almost 20th in the league in their power rankings, they don't get to pick who goes to the playoffs. So I don't care. As long as they keep winning, I don't care if they are the worst team ever to make the playoffs. Just make it happen. And so far, they put themselves in a position to do that.
They keep winning, and you keep talking like that, we're going to have to change the open of the show, and it's going to be John Buffon. I don't care as long as they keep winning. Doug Buffon. Are you kidding me? They're going to.
Oh, my gosh.
That could be
the remix.
Yeah.
I swear. I miss my Uncle Doug every single day, but I especially miss him throughout this football season, because I would love to hear some of the things you'd have to say about this Bears team, because they look so good and they look so bad, and he would go nuts on the airwaves post game. After a bad Trubisky game, where they pulled Trubisky and Foles goes in, or, you know, they don't do anything against the Colts, but then they go out and they beat the they beat the Bucks on Thursday night. You know, I miss what those reactions would have been. So 2020 provided a lot of those opportunities.
How about it?
All right, guys. Well, before we close things out, I want to make sure that everybody is aware of a new show that Alyssa and I debuted a few weeks ago, one that I'm still super excited about. We're calling it Pass the Mic, a show all about empowering female voices in sports media. We've had some great guests so far. We led off with Peggy Kaczynski, legendary sportscaster in Chicago. And then we had Amanda Ruler on last week, who is a Canadian broadcaster in football, lacrosse, hockey, you name it. She has called it. And she's also still an active athlete with rugby and powerlifting. And, you know, just for fun, she won a car on The Price is Right. So she was an amazing guest, talking about her struggles and some of the criticism, unfair harassment she's faced. And they're just really insightful and fun interviews. And I think it's been a fun ride so far. Wouldn't you say, Alyssa?
It's great, because, you know, sometimes, you know, when we're interviewing them, we forget that we're interviewing them, and we're just like listening, and like, oh, it feels like we're, you know, just we get caught up in what they're saying, because, you know, they're both in, you know, different places in their careers, and, you know, they've gone through different things, and, you know, learning about their journey and the struggles, but also their accomplishments and everything that they want to share with the world. It's been an honor to be able to interview them. And, you know, we're just two shows in, and we don't plan on slowing down anytime soon. And I can't wait to keep on doing this, because we're learning a lot. And I know that this is a project that's very special to both John and me. So we hope that you will tune in.
Absolutely. And we hope that you give the show a listen and share it with your friends. And we do it every other Thursday. And so far, it's been a really rewarding experience. And don't forget that after every Bears game, Aldo, Tyler Ellis, and I give you our immediate thoughts on the Bears' performance on the new post-game show, Bear Football. As you can imagine, there are a lot of emotions flowing on that show, so it's nonstop entertainment for an hour, 2 hours, depending on how long it takes for us to blow off the steam. That's how long we go after the show. So make sure that you give that a listen after every game.
But I have enjoyed listening to it's more optimistic, obviously, because the Bears are 4-1.
For now.
I'm hoping that continues. For now, but I'll enjoy it while I can. And let me add that the best way that you can stay informed about all of the great things happening here at the Bar Room is to visit the newly opened website, barroomnetwork.com. Bookmark that so it's easy to find, and also bookmark bearswire.com. I'm the managing editor over there, and we've got plenty of the latest Bears news getting you ready for Sunday's game against the Panthers and beyond.
Excellent. Sounds good. But that will do it for us for now. For Aldo Gandia and Alyssa Barbieri, I'm John Buffone. We'll see you next time, everybody.